Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by a guy who is so high energy, his bandwidth just can't keep up. We got a 5X founder. He's got three exits, angel investor, proud father, kite surfer, now a coach to high-performing SaaS founders. Dan Mertel, welcome to the show.
Colin, appreciate it, man. Super excited to be here. And hopefully the bandwidth keeps up, man, because we got a lot to talk about.
For sure. Now, we connected a couple weeks ago, a month ago, when we were both in New York at the LTV Conf. I saw your talk on the Rocket demo. And as a salesperson myself, normally I see sales talks and I'm like, it's not too good. But this was like, yes, this is all the, like, there was some, for myself, I've been in sales for 15 years. There was some new stuff in there for me. There was some like really good reminders. I took probably two pages of notes and I thought, you know what? We just got to get this guy on the podcast sharing what he knows.
Thanks, man. I'm a practitioner first and foremost. I had to learn all this stuff the hard way, trial and error, and continue to be a student. So I'm glad you found it useful.
Oh man, totally. And so basically the way we're looking at, we're going to split up the episode here is we're going to talk about some, your five principles, and then we've got your Rocket demo framework that we're going to work through. And I think you said there's nine sections there. So basically how to build a great demo. Mm-hmm. First question, isn't demo just, you know, showing off your slides or or walking through your product?
Yeah, if it was that easy, I think that every founder would just be crushing their demos and just closing deals left, right, and center. No, man, like here's the interesting part is nobody, you know, the default, we think sales and doing a presentation of any sorts, nobody ever tells you like, hey, it's actually not about your product. You know, like that's like a big, like, really, it's not? It's like, yeah, no, it's not. At the end of the day, all we're trying to do is really understand the challenges that our prospects having. And then by understanding that, we can better communicate what we have to offer. And what I love about selling is I don't consider it kind of this like dark art of trying to persuade somebody to do something they shouldn't want to do. It's if we do it right, we're literally just recommending, right? Like the best salespeople I've ever talked to and listened to, coaching calls, et cetera, are ones that just recommend the next steps. And it just is so obvious because of the talk track that they use to get the prospect to that point. Mm-hmm. And that has everything to do with how you do your product demo to make sure that you get them to that point.
For sure. And so much of it isn't just about like the script or how you say things. It's, I think so much of what you talked about was actually asking the right questions and being a real human, as opposed to somebody who just wants to show up and talk about features and features and features.
Yeah, no, I think prospects can feel when you have, you know, what I like to call commission breath, right? When they know that you're just saying the right, you're saying what you need to say to try to get the deal. You're letting them talk, right? Because somebody told you, like, ask the question and listen. And then as soon as the person's done talking, then you just say something as if you weren't even listening to their answer. And I think that's what's really changed over, you know, I really think people that come from a support background, people that come from a customer success background, people that know what I call how to sell from their heels, right? I think too often green salespeople, they're on their toes, they're very aggressive, they don't match the energy level of the prospect. And the best ones that I've worked with, that I've built teams, especially around building repeatable, predictable process, are ones that can literally, you know, lean back and almost feel nonchalant about it, but have the language and the talk tracks and the process nailed. You know what I mean? Like they're practitioners in the prep and the process. That is mastery at its best.
So you've obviously, you know, closed a lot of deals yourself. You've obviously seen a lot of salespeople, you know, close deals and help them close more deals. So I imagine there's some sort of key principles that you've worked out here. Do you want to talk to me about sort of how the way you see the world?
Yeah. So personally, like me, call, customer, deal, I've done over $30 million in software deals. And I mean, some of my companies had a, you know, 3K ACV to, you know, 50K ACV. So I've done a lot. Yeah, a lot of selling. I mean, when I was 24, I started an enterprise consulting company called Sphere Technologies that sold to the Fortune 500. So here I am really with no credentials whatsoever trying to sell CFOs and CTOs our services. And that was really where I had to cut my teeth in selling. And I guess what I'd love to start with, Colin, just talk about some of the challenges. You know, the first, and what I designed in the Rocket Demo Builder, which we'll get into that framework, is a process that solves a few problems. Number one, demos that never end, right? I always joke that it's like going to that Small World ride at Disneyland. You know, this is the song. Or no, it's a small world after all. That one.
Yeah.
Literally, most product demos, most sales presentations fall into that bucket. Or you get on a call with a prospect, you say the wrong few things, and all of a sudden they stone cold you in the reaction, and you're just like, is this person even there? They seem dismissive. Or even worse, you have these long 16 months, 24 month sales cycles because you didn't set up the frame in the first few conversations to make sure that we can get that down to my clients, half of that, double the win rates, et cetera. What these five principles will help you and anybody else listening do is really create a fast and furious demo. I think that most of the times what we're seeing as a trend in the sales industry is that the prospect's coming to you with more information about your business than you might even be trained on. You know, if you're the founder, great, you're going to know it better. But if you're a sales rep, they're coming ready, prepared, armed. So we need to make sure we kind of get through things faster. We need to create a scenario and a setup where we welcome people in to our world and they feel comfortable to welcome us into theirs, right? Where they're disclosing the information that we need to be able to make an assessment. And even better is if you follow this process, it's going to get the prospect to navigate you through the sales process, right? And we hear this all the time with coaches or champions. But what if we could ask the right questions to, regardless of who we're talking to, get them to navigate us in there? So that is what the Rocket Demo was created to help solve and deliver. Now, one of the five hot principles that I talk about and teach is the demo, not tour principle. And this is really the idea for founders, because I designed this Rocket Demo Builder for first-time founders or people that are trying to transition from founder-led sales to sales team-led sales. And the demo, not tour, is really understanding that your prospect doesn't care about your sign-up flow and your dashboards and your settings pages and all these things. At the end of the day, they want to see how your product's feature solves their problem and the benefit that they can assume that it would have in their world. So, you know, when I think of who does this best, who's ever done this best, we can go to Apple, right? And it's true for Steve Jobs era to Tim Cook. I mean, when Tim or Steve takes the stage and they're doing a reveal of a new product, they're going straight to the demo of the product itself, not how we get there, not the setup, not the settings. Literally, here's the problem we've seen in the world, here's our solution, and here's how it's going to solve those problems. So it's really quick. And I think that's where a lot of time is wasted on that presentation. Does that make sense, Colin?
Totally. And one of my favorite parts of Steve's, you know, you look at any of his, you know, big presentations, any of the big releases, he's the best salesperson because he gets you right to that magical moment. And then he asks you a question. And even though you're in the audience, you can't respond, but you respond in your head. And he goes, isn't that amazing? And everybody's going, yeah, it's that open-ended question. Right? That's like, hey, I'm inviting you to be a part of this.
And it's future pacing, right? Isn't that amazing? Even if you didn't think it was, you now think, maybe I should be amazed by that. Mm-hmm. And you're right. That is amazing, right? So it's like, sometimes even language, you know, we can nerd out a little bit, but you know, I love it when my sales reps say things like, you know, let's fast forward into a year. We've been working together. Things are going amazing. You know, if you had to paint a picture of what kind of goals we'd go out and accomplish together, what would that look like? So it's kind of like speaking in a way that makes people feel like this is already done and we're already there. And I feel like that's what Steve Jobs, he almost made you feel like you already had 1,000 songs in your back pocket. You just needed to make the purchase, right? Mm-hmm. So demo, not tour, Apple does it best. And I think that that's where good prep comes in. And we'll talk more about that in the framework itself. Number two is connect to the pain. So one of the biggest hurdles salespeople have is they get to the end of the call and the prospect says something like, that's amazing, send me some more information. You know, we'll review it and we'll get back to you. Now here's what happens in typically those situations is you didn't stay on the challenge that they're having and truly quantify it. What I mean by that, and I tell this long story, I think at LTV Conf about a recent snow biking incident. But the idea is that if somebody has a challenge, okay, whatever it is, from needing more leads to improving their team collaboration to improving their marketing efficiency, we need to quantify it. We need to get it into some kind of number or impact level so that we can really talk to them about the cost of not doing something or the cost of the way it is today. Because if we don't do that, if we just say, hey, what are some of the challenges you're facing? They answer it and then we move on. Then that 100,000% at the end of the conversation, you're going to get a response like that because you didn't connect the pain. So what I like to do is I think of it as like an elastic, right? And on one end, we're gonna try to nail the pain where they're at today, and we're gonna lock that in. Okay, so we need to quantify it. We need to ask things like, you know, what's the impact been to your business? Why is this important to you now? What happens if you don't get this solved in the next quarter, et cetera, et cetera. We nail that in with an elastic band. We stretch. This is the cool part. When we do the demo, what we're doing is we're stretching across whatever surface or whatever timeline the potential future of what the world could look like if they use their solution, right? And it's in those two poles, the polarity of where they're at today and really feeling the pain and what the possible future could look like, that we create tension. And there's no sale ever made without creating tension. It's tension in, oh my gosh, you're right. I can't believe I didn't look at it this way. And if I don't have this solved, or it sounds like you have the solution, I may not get over to where I need to be, right? And this is true if you're selling to a role within an organization or to the owner of the organization. So to me, it's all about connecting pain, meaning that, and this is, you know, I think, Colin, the big thing is if you have time in between conversations, right? So you might do a discovery call, and then for some reason, you only got 3 weeks before you do a demo. When you get back on that demo, if you do not reconnect to pain and understand why they were reached out in the first place, then you'll go through the demo and it won't work because they forgot why they reached out in the first place. I don't know if you've ever done this when you're searching for a solution. You might email a bunch of different companies. It takes a few weeks to finally get on the phone with somebody. And when you get on, you're like, well, it's not really a problem anymore because you forgot, right? Mm. That's what I'm talking about is it's kind of like a bruise. We need to just push on it. The prospect has a bruise. They came to us because they're like, this hurts, but maybe they forgot how painful it is. We just got to go that, and they go out. You're like, I can help with that.
Beautiful. Yeah, you're hitting on two really great things there. And I think one that you're sort of subtly mentioning is if you're talking to somebody and it's been more than a couple of days, you need to basically summarize the situation at the top of the call. Because if you
always,
just go
ahead. I just literally just did a call with a founder, 15-minute follow-up. And I said, hey, I just want to confirm some of the stuff we talked about in the last call. And I go through the same thing. You mentioned this. This is the reality. You said that this is the impact to your business. Has anything changed? And that's all I say is just, I just ask them, has anything changed during this conversation? They're like, no, if anything, it's gotten worse. And I'm like, oh, please explain.
Tell me more.
yeah. Bad salespeople be like, cool, let's talk about the solution. Yeah. I'm like, no, tell me more. Cause I want to push it a little bit more. So that's number two. Number three is lead by questions. And I think this is where the pros are just, you know, sometimes they get to a point of like just ignorant savant, right? Where they just inherently have built this muscle memory of incredible questions to help prospects kind of see things as self-evident or, you know, really. Now we can create talk tracks and we can kind of help people because I really think scripts don't work. Scripts might be good for initial cold calling outbound. But, you know, in the world of kind of solution selling that we're in today, we need to be able to go different places and then bridge people back. So lead by questions for me is, you know, when I think of like great interviewers, right? I think it's Barbara Walters. Is that the?
Yep.
Yeah. Or like, you know, obviously Charlie Rose before he got himself in trouble. But for me, it's like coming across as just genuinely interested and empathetic and curious, right? And I think that if that's the tonality that you bring, you slow down, again, go to your heels and just say things like, hey, I'm just curious. Like, what did it look like before? Or, you know, if you could wave a magic wand, how would you describe a perfect scenario? You know, or, you know, my favorite question is 12 months, we're going to be hanging out together. you know, dropping a big steep line at your favorite ski hill, right? But I won't even say favorite ski hill. I'll be like, what's your favorite ski hill? They'll say this. I say, cool. We just rented a chopper and we're about to drop a big bowl because we're celebrating because we just crushed it in the last 12 months. What happened in your world to feel really proud of your progress at that point? I think that's a great question if in my world anyways, because I'm coaching incredible founders. But I think that to me is, as you look at your demo process, what we need to do is build a bank of questions that we know that depending on the scenario that we can just pull on to go deeper. And even if they don't give it to us in that first question, we're ready for question two and three, and we might hit it from different angles. And I think that great salespeople don't sell anything. They just ask questions that allow the prospect to understand the value as self-evident and the decision as a now thing.
Mm-hmm. Good. I mean, what's better? Me standing there and telling you about my product or me asking you to explain to me, you know, why, how you see our product helping you, right? In one case, I'm telling you and all your filters go up. In the other case, I'm like, hey, so tell me how you see this, you know, impacting your organization. Do you see this? Talk to me about how you see this helping your team hit their goals this year. And they're like, oh, well, you know, this and this and that. And it's like, now they're selling to you.
Totally. Right? I mean, one thing we'll talk about in the Rocket Demo Builder is always like, even if it's like, you know, what's the challenges they tell you is always even saying just like, is there anything else? Like, I think sometimes even though they tell us, if we just go one more question down, is there anything I missed? Right? Is there anything you'd like to add to the agenda? Yeah, actually this. Oh, perfect. Let me write that down. And it's just fun because if you do it right, they're selling themselves. Like one of my favorite questions is, for me anyways, in a service business, right? So if you're selling coaching services, et cetera, is why me? Right? So like Colin, I'll often ask like, you know, what is it about my background, things you might've read or seen on the internet that makes you feel like I'm the guy that could help you with this?
Great question.
It's a great question. Cause then they go, well, I've been watching your YouTube videos for 8 months. I know you worked with Liam at staff.com, you know, timedoctor.com. I seen you speak at LTV Conf and I'm having this issue and it sounds like you're the guy that can help me out. And I go, hey, perfect. Sounds like you've been part of the community for a while. I'd love to see if it's a fit. Then I move on. And it's just like, that's a great question, I think. In any scenario, you can do that for like, what is it about our product that makes you feel like we might be able to help you out? Let them tell you the research they've done so that you can use that when you do the presentation, not waste their time. The other question I ask right before that question typically is, you know, what makes this a now thing? What's going on in your business that makes this, you know, something you want to solve now versus later? Because that helps create a commitment to urgency. And that'll help avoid the, let me get back to you, you know, objection at the end, or, you know, it's not right a now thing. Because if you start off and ask them that and they sell you on why it's a now thing, then they've got to be congruent on making a decision now. So that objection at the end goes away.
Totally. It's we're getting a little Chialdini here, but it's 100%. It's the consistency theory. They've already 100%. Said this is
whatever they've said. Now. They want to be consistent on what they've done in the past. So like my whole thing is, if we do it right, objections are taken care of in the process, not at the end, which I think is traditionally how people thought of sales. And that's why it's lead by questions. It's your questions should actually be dealing with objections before they even become a thing. So that's number three. Number four is my, you know, favorite one is, you know, peg the money shot, drop the mic, right? And what I mean by that is I think there's this bias called the recency and primacy bias, right? So primacy is the first thing and recency, and this is why there's the rule of three. So you can Google rule of three. It's a human psychology. We're predisposed to threes. And with the recency and primacy bias, the idea is that we want to start with something really great. So if there's like three features you want to show the prospect based on their challenges, you want to start and end with the best, but you want to end with the best because that's the one that's really going to get the hook, right? Mm-hmm. So I always love to, you know, every founder knows, like, what's the one thing when you show a prospect, they're like, oh, that's cool. Save that for the end. And then just say, so here's what I've heard. You know, you have this challenge, this challenge, this challenge. Great. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to show you a few key features that'll help you solve those problems so you can get this benefit, right? So benefit is always like, I'm always asking myself in my head in copy and in conversation, so what? So everybody listening, always answer the question, so what? It's not this thing, so you can get, it's so what? So you get a benefit. So I'll say at the beginning, so we'll go over this, this, and this, but I'm always leaving the this is the best thing because I want to end the demo part on the best thing that gets them to go, damn. Does that make sense, Colin?
Totally. I'm just thinking back to Thinking Fast and Slow, and they talk about the peak end bias is doesn't accurately save your how you feel throughout the entire experience. It remembers the peak moment in the presentation. So that, oh shit, that wow moment, and then the end moment. And those two events heavily bias how you remember the entire thing. So if you get a very mediocre presentation, but you nail the peak and you kill it at the end, probably going to do well.
This is true for even vacations, right? I know that if my last day of vacation is epic, then I'll look back on the whole vacation as a win. So I typically load all the better things at the end because in case the weather's shitty, then I know I'm going to get a win overall in the memory banks for that specific reason. So that's kind of the concept. So we want to peg the many shot. And then five is the virtual close. Now here's what the virtual close is. It's essentially testing the close and also trying to get the prospect to help you understand how they buy. Right. And I think that especially for mid-market and enterprise customers, it's really important to figure out what is their buying process to get your type of technology deployed. And if you're doing enterprise, maybe you're selling a proof of concept. If you're doing mid-market, you might be just deploying to, you know, a department in an organization for kind of a land and expand process. And the key is to ask them questions like, you know, when's the last time you invested in a solution similar to ours? And they'll go like, you know, well, we bought SAP last, you know, 2 years ago. Wow, that sounds like a really major decision investment. I'm just curious, what other departments were involved in making that decision, you know, to the point where you guys decided to move forward? And said, well, we definitely needed IT on board to get the firewall approved. We needed to get finance because they're going to write the check. We needed to get legal because they had to review and da, 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 da. And so what you want to do in the virtual close is essentially try to unpack all the different steps involved in making that decision so that we can write them down and then ask the prospect, you know, if they're like, you know, motivated, they want to move forward. It's like, would it be possible just because, you know, here's what I've experienced. And I love doing that. It's like, here's what we've experienced. I don't know if you feel this way. In the past, you know, a lot of these folks, they're just trying to do their job and they just hate being sprung on last minute to do a big piece of work. So if it's okay, I would love to reach out to Bob in IT and get his checklist for what needs to be approved as a vendor or, you know, et cetera, legal to make sure that we understand kind of the standard contract that you guys like to look at, et cetera. And by doing that, you get permission. You get to start the process in parallel, especially for enterprise, in parallel to even getting a deal done and evaluated to take care of some of these roadblocks. Because at the end of the day, the reason why you're getting a 60-month sales cycle is because those people are asked at the last minute their input and they reset the process. If you're lucky, and you don't even, the worst part is many times you don't even get to meet or talk or know about these people. And what I want to do is I actually want to befriend them up front. Let them know I'm a known quantity. I'm a person just like them. And I'll reach out and I'll be like, hey, you know, Bob in IT, I was just talking to Jane in this department and they're evaluating our solution and it's super early. So I just want to let you know that. But she mentioned that you guys would definitely be involved in the decision. I totally see that that's the right move anyways. And I just want to know if you guys had a checklist. And here's the checklist we typically use. Feel free to let us know if you have your own or if this would work. To get their buy-in. And I just think that the virtual close is one of the easiest implementations for any sales conversation to fast track and reduce your sales cycle from half. Like literally my clients go from 16 months to 8 months by doing this because you get to do it in parallel.
100%. Just like you said, even if you're not selling 16 month sales cycles, every time you bring in a new buying influence, you reset the clock. Right.
Always.
So if it's going to take 8 months, you can do it in parallel or you can do it like in serial.
Sequentially, and you're going to suffer.
Totally. Yeah. I've made that mistake more times than I'd like to admit, but plenty where I should know better, but I probably still make the mistake every now and then.
100%. I mean, that's these principles literally, I didn't technically read from a book. It's just trial and error. And then I had to use the books to find the solution to solve those problems. And to me, this is why I really focus on founders, because I think if I can teach founders how to create a repeatable process for themselves, then the transition to sales team-led sales becomes a lot easier. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome, man. So these are the five key principles. You've got a bit of a framework for actually how we put all this together and turn it into a, you know, a great demo. So talk to me.
Yeah, my world is drawing pictures, squares, triangles, and circles. I literally think in visual frameworks. So, so this is just one of hundreds that I've created to help scale SaaS companies. Nice. If it will help, Colin, what I'll do is I'll pull it up on my side and share my screen.
Cool. And if you're listening, I'll take a screenshot and we'll throw a link to the picture in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll actually right here, if anybody's listening, you can go to danmartel2lsmartel.com/rocket demo. So spelt out rocket demo, and you can download your copy, which it actually go through the five hot principles in detail. And I give you the 9-box model for building your own rocket demo. But let's go through exactly how this works. So pretty straightforward, I think, but might be new to you. Number one is we got to prep, right? We need to do the research. So before any conversation with a prospect, you need to minimum understand their world, their reality. So this is things like reading any news about the organization, obviously doing LinkedIn backgrounds, checking their social profiles to figure out if there's any big news in their world, and trying to understand maybe some technologies that they use by using like a built with or other, but we want to diagnose their problems or at least understand it based on whatever context we've gotten for that initial opportunity, right? If it was from a trade show, some lead magnets or referral, we want to make sure that we prep properly before the call, right? So that's one. Second is orchestrate. For me, this is really important that when people start a conversation, we just show our appreciation for the call, right? Regardless of who they are. We want to check in to make sure that we're both on the same page in regards to the agenda, right? We want to make sure that, hey, here's what we're going to do. Is there anything else that you think we should add, right? That's my favorite question. So today we're going to do this, this, and this. Is there anything you want to add? Yes, there's this. Oh, perfect. Let me add that to it. And then the end goal. So the end goal is kind of framing that today we're going to get to a certain point. And usually it's, we're either going to agree that this is a fit and we're going to move forward and you guys are going to buy our product, or maybe we're going to schedule another call so that we can connect with other members of your team that might be part of the buying process so that we can help you present the solution in the right light that'll help them get to understand it. So orchestrate is really this. And usually when I'm doing sales coaching calls, like reviews for my sales teams, I'm really just spending most of my time in the first 7 minutes and the last 5 minutes. Like that's where a lot of the magic happens, that I can provide some coaching to really improve the win rates. And it's really around that stuff. Then we go to the agenda. So we review the key features that we're going to talk about. We're going to provide an overview of the product. So this is just high level, because sometimes people think they know what you do, but they really don't know what you do. So just quick product overview. So that's number three. And then the center of this, if you think about like that in the first 5 minutes, right? Because this is designed to be a 30-minute product demo start to finish, right? And I've been able to sell $30,000 annual contract value deals in 30 minutes. And people are like, there's no way. Trust me, I could walk you through it. It's owning the frame. If you control the frame, then you can control the time. If all of a sudden the prospect takes control of it, then all of a sudden you're at their mercy and they're asking you not dumb questions, but just bleeding questions, if you want to call it that, because they're bleeding time. And then you don't have the time that you need to do the thing, because if you're doing back-to-back calls, you need to make sure you get to a certain point at each stage. So then first 5 to 7 minutes right off the bat, then we're getting into the feature, right? So we want to make sure that it addresses their question. We want to ask them, like you said earlier, right? How do you, do you see yourself using this? And ask them to explain the value that they would get in their organization. What would then, another question, what would be the impact on your business if you were deploying this technology? So to me, it's like, we kind of do that loop for each of the, let's say, three core features that are going to solve their problems and talk about the benefits that they're going to receive, right? The other thing that I love to do that's not technically on this worksheet that I think is critical is introducing mini case studies for each one of those, right, Colin? So like I'll often say, this is the feature. Actually, one of our customers plant seed, case study, recently deployed this to their organization and got this result, right? So if you can show the feature, get them to buy in on it impacting their business, and then mention a current customer like them that got a result using that specific feature, boom, that's like a bow, tied up, sealed and delivered. We do that 3 times, right? So feature 2, feature 3, we leave the feature 3 as the number one drop the mic, peg the money shot moment. And then we come back, box number 7 is the review. We want to summarize the key points. You know, Colin, at the beginning of the call, you mentioned you had this problem. As I've shown, this result, impact on your business. Do you have any other questions that we haven't gone over yet to help you make, with your evaluation? We answer their questions, right? But we quickly move on to the close, right? So often, especially new salespeople, they forget to ask for the deal, right? How often, Colin, I've done this. We had the deal. We didn't shut up and ask for it. And we sold ourselves out of the deal.
Yeah. You close another call when you should have closed the deal.
Yeah. Like it was literally ours to have. We talked ourselves out of it. Like too often we think there's more we need to say. Sometimes we need to say nothing else, be quiet, and just say something like, where do we go from here? Right? Mm-hmm. Are you ready to move forward? Like literally, that's it. Are you ready to move forward? They're like, yep, looks good. Let's do it. Perfect. Or if they don't, then just say, hey, who else would be? And usually I get the decision maker stuff earlier, maybe on an email and stuff. But if you have it, we want to make sure that we get the right decision makers. There is some qualifications you want to do before you get to a demo that I think are really important. As a salesperson, it's nothing more frustrating than realize that you're selling to the wrong person. And this is where you would do the virtual close. Like this is where you'd ask about, have you ever bought a product like theirs recently? What did that process look like? Who is involved? Would it be okay? Et cetera, et cetera. So that's 8. And then 9 is follow-up. If you're good and you can get a credit card updated, do it on the call. So this is one thing I teach my clients to do. If the person's ready to move forward and they say, yeah, let's do it. Say, perfect. I'm going to open up your account here. I've got your credit card details. Does your card start with a 4 or 5? It starts with a 4 or 5. That's it. You're welcome. That is my favorite question because they go, what? And then they look, oh, starts with a 5. Perfect. And what's the number? Dun, 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 dun. Great. I've just got you updated. You're now on this plan. Here's what's going to happen next. So I'm not going to get into the whole close process, but you got to kind of create some excitement. And then we'll get to the BAM fam in a sec, but my favorite thing is to deal with objections after the close. Colin, have you ever dealt with this? Somebody says, yeah, I'm in. And then they're not. So one question I like to ask and try to make it funny. It's again, your personality from the heels. I always say, other than a global financial meltdown, including North Korea, is there any reason why, tomorrow or next week, you would have any issues moving forward based on what you've said today? Because I want them to then bring up, well, my co-founder might have an issue with this. Okay, let's talk about that. Or, we're going to run out of money in the next 3 weeks. Oh, that's good to know. Let's talk about it. So like, even after you've gotten the deal, I think it's really important to then do another round of potential objection challenges that could come up by asking a question like that. And if for any reason you can't get the deal done on the call, then I always implement BAMFAM. So BAMFAM is book a meeting from a meeting. It is a pivotal rule that every sales organization I've ever been part of, you do not hang up the phone until you have something scheduled. So they might say, hey, send me the proposal, I'll review it with my team, let you know. I say, perfect. I always ask, what was your favorite part of our product, what you saw today? What was the part that you feel would have the biggest impact on your business, right? Your favorite. And they go, well, this. I was like, ooh, that's cool. I recently did an Orange Theory class. Well, not recently, but 3 months ago. And I went for 3 months while I was in San Diego. And after our first introductory class, that was their first question. And I was like, well done. Yeah. What was your favorite part about the class? And she waited and asked every person for their answer. And I was just like this little sales happiness in me.
Yeah.
So essentially get them enrolled, tell them what's going to happen next. If they can't, BAMFAM. I do it on the call. It's like perfect. So you like this. Great. When do you think you'd be able to talk to your team? Well, you know, we have a team meeting next Monday. Great. Why don't we do this? Why don't we schedule? And I always schedule the same time the next week, this week, because usually there's a cadence in people's calendar, so it's easy. Why don't we do 20 minutes with these two people? What are their emails again? Perfect. What I'll do is I'll send the invite email with the description of our conversation, real high level, some information that you can use to kind of present to let them know before the meeting. And if you have any questions beforehand, just reply back to that invite. I'll make sure that I get those cleared up. On the next meeting, agenda, agenda, agenda. We're going to do this, this, and this with the anticipation we're going to get to this point. And I'm really excited and looking forward to our next conversation. They're like, awesome, great. You've been amazing. Super cool. Done. That is how I believe world-class product demos are done. And that's why I created this, because I just think people have really cool technology. Like literally my clients that I work with have incredibly value, super neat, advanced technology. That the biggest challenge, they just don't know how to communicate to their prospects about how it works. It's they get too enamored around what they've built and they don't realize that it's not about them. It's not about their solution. It's 100% about the your potential customer's challenges.
Mm-hmm. It's huge, man. And I love the BAM fam. We have a similar rule here where basically it's not a real opportunity unless you've got next steps booked. Because that's your close, right? If you couldn't close them on next steps, if they're like, oh no, we want to review this internally, that's kind
of, we'll get back to you when we're ready. We don't want to, you don't get anything.
No. It's like, we might come back in 9 months, but this is not a real opportunity right now.
Yep.
Yeah. 100%. And that was, I think any sales organization, if you take nothing away from the last, 40 minutes we've been talking, this is the single most important thing. I'm hoping most people are doing this already, because it feels like, table stakes, but yeah.
I would love to say it is, Colin, but I've just coached hundreds of entrepreneurs and it's like maybe 20% understand this.
Yeah.
I think what happens is they do it and then they get lazy, especially if you get a lot of lead gen, get a lot of opportunities. This is what's funny. It's with a lot of professionals and entrepreneurs, especially business number 2 and 3, is they forget their success habits, right? They used to do things, they stopped doing it. The results start to wane. And then they forgot that I used to do this. It's like, just go back to the basics, literally stop, reset, go back, try it again. Oh yeah. I forgot I wasn't doing this. I wasn't doing that. All of a sudden the numbers come back. So a lot of sales coaching that I do is just resetting the process, because for whatever reason, the confidence came, the bad habits came, whatever, it's just really just a reset on the pattern.
Totally. And you're so right. Being great at sales it's just, you're stacking habits on top of habits on top of habits, right? It's you get to know the feel of the conversation. There's no magical notes or phrases or sayings or anything like that. It's all of these good habits that sort of compound and turn you from, just average to, superhuman.
High producer. Yep.
100%. Question about the process here. Are you doing a discovery call first? Are you jumping right into the demo?
Yeah. So it really depends on lead volume and quality. One of my favorite stories to share is one of my clients, Tom, at Cherry Auctions today. When we started working together, he was like, "Hey man, I need more leads." So I was like, "Cool. I've got about 16 different strategies to increase lead gen. Let's look at kind of what you got." We do a growth map, and we decided in his case, he actually had a lot of traffic, SEO traffic. So we essentially analyzed the top 25 in entry pages, created what I call a beacon lead magnet, which is essentially a bribe to get a contact, and I have a strategy around that. But we placed the beacon lead magnet on those top 25 pages, which is kind of like the 80-20 rule. And then what we do is we actually create a demo request flow. So based on the download, we actually transition into a demo. A lot of people don't understand this, but to me, if we nail the lead magnet, right, and that's why I call it a beacon lead magnet, if we nail that right, it actually is a perfect transition to scheduling a demo, right? And so we did that, and all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, he calls me and he goes, "Dan, I'm booked for the next 3 weeks. What do I do?" I was like, perfect. We solve each problem people realize, like when you break you fix something, you break the next thing. So he had a lead gen problem. We fixed that. He broke his sales problem. So then all of a sudden we got to fix the sales problem, et cetera. So what we did is we added a funnel filter, added some questions to triage the lead gen on the opt-in, mm-hmm. to then decide where do we want to take them, right? So the first step we did was added a discovery call, right? So that he could do a quicker, like 15-minute, you know, batch of discovery calls to then schedule his demos. But even that didn't last long, where he was still packed with a bunch of, you know, unqualified discovery calls and demos. So what we did is then went to the form itself and asked, like, what I called, you know, those qualifying questions. Like, what's, you know, ideally one or two questions that if you could get the answer to, you would know that they were an incredibly qualified prospect, right? So for example, in my world, I know if I ask them if they've ever worked with a business coach before and they say yes, I go, perfect, you're gonna be awesome, because you already get it. I don't have to, you know, communicate how that works. You're just looking for the right type of person to work with. And I'm pretty sure if you're a SaaS founder, I can help. People wouldn't show up in my world if they weren't. So, you know, other people, it might be marketing budgets or whatever. So we had the funnel filter on the opt-in. And then what we did is we triaged their answer. So essentially there's really three options if you have kind of a mid-market product. One, you could just send them right into the trial, right? So if they were newer and you were like, hey, I don't really want to spend time on a call, I'm just going to send them into a trial. People that were kind of like mid-level qualified, you know, lead scoring, we would just send them to an automated demo. And then everybody else, we would kick them into the discovery and then to the demo. But it's really about just like volume and what you're doing. So I do have another framework called the Discovery Call Builder that you can put on top of this, that follows similar frameworks. It's a lot shorter. And that really, really sets up to knock this out of the park. So most of my clients are winning 60 to 70% of their demos, because if they implement the discovery call, it takes care of a lot of the heavy lifting that sets up the frame for this to just crush. But I'm not saying you need to. Sometimes it adds more time than you want to in your sales velocity, but it's a tool to add when appropriate.
For sure. Like I think our average sale ranges from like 30K to 120K. And we have an inbound or outbound SDR, just like 5-10 minutes, just making sure that they're qualified. Then we have our discovery call. Then we have the like demo pitch call. And then generally there's like a question or two, or we've got some next steps. So if anybody's curious, like context wise, that's sort of where we've settled. We haven't done a ton of one call closing, just in our.
Well, 30 to 100K is a different, I mean, you can do it. It's just, it's one of those things. Again, it's like, is it efficient? You know, like if you're getting 10 leads, you know, quality leads a month, then maybe you do it the way you're doing it, right? Because it's definitely going to yield a better result. But if you're the founder, because again, I coach mostly founders trying to transition from founder-led sales, so they don't have that much extra time. Yeah. So if they can get, you know, some level of yield for a lot less time, then that's what we're trying to aim for.
That's totally fair. Back when I was when I was like the founder salesperson, we had no inbound person. I would do everything. And it was basically like a two call close. That was my goal.
Totally. Yeah. I pretty much, if I do and I don't, I've got two salespeople now, but if I'm doing a call, I'm squishing the discovery and the demo in the same call. It's art to do it. I can't say I always nail it in 30 minutes. Sometimes I'll go a little long. But I would much rather try to do two calls in an hour than two calls in an hour and a half. So it is what it is.
Hey, I know we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but could you give us the high level on what your discovery call looks like?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the first part. So really my whole thing is try to understand, you know, who they are. So I always ask, like, you know, who's your ideal customer problem, like ideal customer profile, what problem you solve for them and how do you solve it? Right. Then I'm going to ask them, you know, I always say I like to kind of go to the future, the current, and then what are the challenges? Cause I always say like things like, you know, what I'd love to figure out is where you want to end up. So we have a clear picture of the target. What do we have to work with today? So we know what we got to work with, right? Where are you at today? And then what are some of the challenges that have been frustrating or getting in the way from you to achieve those results? So we know what we need to overcome to get you there. And then I'll do the why me, why now. And that at a high level, and it needs to be customized for each SaaS business, but that to me is really just setting up the frame, because really you're not doing any selling.
Totally.
You started by saying, hey, we're going to figure out if I can be helpful or not. If I can't, I'll let you know up front and give you your time back. And if I can, we can talk about how that might look. Is that cool? They go, yeah, cool. Perfect. Boom, 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 boom. Question, questions. And the way I think about it is really I'm auditioning them. right? Not like a dick thing, not like, oh, I'm too cool, so I'm gonna audition you, but really just, I think it's a good frame for a lot of salespeople to understand. It's like, we can't help everybody, nor should we try. Mm-hmm. And our job is to make sure that we figure out if they're the right fit for what we do, because at the end of the day, you know, we don't need another customer, we need another success story, right? And that's true, because if anything, you know, service business, product business, coaching, et cetera, like one of the biggest pains to a business is the wrong customer ending up inside the delivery channel, right? And all of a sudden now expectations are out of whack, team stressed out, the customer's being rude, it affects other customers potentially if you, you know, if somehow they know that they're writing, like it's just not worth it. So, you know, it's interesting. Even in my world, I've told my salespeople, you know, I don't know, you ever watch Billions? Mm-hmm. Billions is one of my favorite shows. So there's this episode where Ace, is it Ace? No, what's his name?
Fuck, what's his name? It's Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, right? So that guy's talking. There's they hired in-house legal counsel, and they bring him in to talk to him, and they're essentially going to fire him. And they're talking about Wilburys, right? They're like, you know, the Wilburys, and there's like Paul, blah blah blah. I don't even know the music reference, but I get the concept. And he just looks at him and says, and you're just not a Wilbury. He's like, I am a Wilbury. And he's like, no, you're not. He's like, yeah, no, I'm a Wilbury. He goes, no, today's your last day. Have an amazing day. And here's the thing is, the way I think about it, what I tell my salespeople is, you know, your three favorite people you've talked to so far that we've told you after the fact that we've gotten incredible results for. I need you to put that person together in your mind. And if you feel at any point that you're talking with somebody that doesn't embody the values, the work ethic, the whatever it is, if you just feel in your gut something's off about the individual, yeah, I'm giving you 100% permission to move on and pass, and I'll still give you the commission, because the last thing I want to do is have you oversell and then us have to deal with that impact in the business. And I'll tell you, just, you know, letting the people know that, hey, we care more about quality than just getting a sale, really sets up a great culture and a great environment. Now, obviously I can't have them take advantage of it. You know, we'll check, but I think that's a really important thing that a lot of companies don't do that probably would help them out, because man, if you get sales going, customer success is gonna be, you know, swamped. And the last thing they wanna have to do is deal with customers that had an unmet expectation, not because the salesperson did anything wrong, just because the customer is that kind of customer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk to our sales team about, you don't wanna sell churn, right? We wanna sell case studies. We wanna close case studies, and we don't wanna sell churn. And I think I'm stumbling here, because I know you know who Bob Dylan is. You know who George Harrison is. Jeff
Lynne. Were they all part of the Wilburys?
Yeah, Dylan, Harrison, Jeff Lynne. He's the least known guy. He's from Electric Light Orchestra, Roy Orbison, and Tom Petty.
So you would appreciate the reference more than I did, obviously. But if somebody searches Billions Wilburys, you will understand. So in our sales program playbook, there's a link to that video on Billion to explain the concept of what I'm talking about.
Nice. All right, I'll see if I can track it down, throw it in the show notes if I can find it. And then just for reference, I'll send Dan a video of the Wilburys just so he knows who we're talking about.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard their songs. They were super popular, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago when their second album came out. Or they released a big music video because I think Roy Orbison's he died early, but his wife finally signed off on letting them share all the content. And she was like the last holdout. And so it's like 15 years ago, a huge music celebration where they could share all of this extra content that this great group recorded, but it had just been sort of locked away because one of the people would sign off on it. Anyway, this is not a music podcast, so we'll get back to the demo.
Show at hand.
Yeah. Talk to me about the impact that you've seen this had on, you know, companies that you work with.
You know, there's all these great examples of like sales teams just crushing it. You know, I've even heard that HubSpot started teaching this framework amongst their account execs. But for me, what I love is like the Tom at, you know, charity auctions, where all of a sudden they build that confidence as a founder to actually charge more, right? When all of a sudden your win rate goes through the roof, then you go, maybe I should charge more, right? Like, why am I... If 80% of people I'm talking to are buying, why not put the price up? Because maybe there's a kind of a yield curve that I don't even understand. Mm-hmm. to, I mean, just like even you mentioned Liam before we started Time Doctor. I mean, their client, Mick on his team, his sales team, they use it to crush their sales quota, right? Like, yeah, I'm really bad at like names of customers, but I work with, you know, the founders of ClickFunnels that were the fastest from 0 to 100 million in 5 years, to Trevor and his team at carrot.com, to, you know, really notable guys like Ryan Dice from Digital Marketer. He's got a product called Praxio, and Ryan Levesque, New York Times bestseller with the book called Ask. Everybody should read that book. It's awesome. He's got a product called Bucket. So I coach some incredible founders, and honestly, I like to be the guy behind the scenes, right? I want to let them be Michael Jordan, and I'll be the coach that worked with those guys to get them those results. And yeah, on average, typically double their win rates and reduce their sales times by half.
Beautiful. That's, I mean, the monetary value of cutting your sales cycle in half and increasing your win rates are huge. And you know, I'm sure there's listeners going, oh, well, you know, probably not mine because, you know, we've got our stuff under, like, we've got it so buttoned down, man. Like, I've been doing this for a long time, and maybe not the longest time of anybody listening here, but I find there's always still something that can be improved. There's always something.
I still study sales. Like, people don't understand. Like, when I say I'm a student first, I'm a coach second. Like, I show up, I listen, I consume, I take notes, I tweak, I still sell, because to me, it's like, I don't want to lose that connection to the market, right? Even if I only do 2 sales calls a week, I still want to talk. I still want to understand. And when I learn something, then I teach it to my sales team. And yeah, I think that's just complacency if people feel that way. There's always room of improving.
100%. I take deals. I'll do like a week or something a couple times a year, usually giving one of our reps off, but I like it because it keeps me relevant. It keeps me, I understand, like, I run a sales podcast. I have to be actively involved, you know, in sales, at least on a semi-regular basis. I mean, one of the founders here is CEO, so I can't, you know, be taking deals like every week, but, cause you know, be a terrible salesperson when it comes to follow-up and all of that. I usually, like, you know, team up, but
I'm, you know what I do, Colin, just as a little, I feel guilty for this, but I use my SDRs to do all my follow-up. So I still do the call, but then I'll be like, I'm going to loop in Wendell and he'll follow up with the information. And, you know, just, and I may cherry pick the best calls to do, cause I don't want to have the potential of an unqualified conversation, but yeah, it's fun. I don't know. I just, again, I'm not, you know, when people get over that psychological, you know, boundary of thinking that selling is evil or bad or unethical, I think then it, all of a sudden it's just like, man, how many people can I talk to and recommend our product, right? Because that's all it is. It's a recommendation. Like, at the end of the day, I'm not trying to get you to do anything you don't want to do. I'm just trying to help you get, and this is like a big thing, is helping the prospect get themselves out of the deal. Too often, it's a limiting belief that exists in the prospect. It has nothing to do with you. And unfortunately, any other person at organization would probably say yes. They just don't have the understanding or the belief in themselves. Like, Colin, this is what I've learned, is most people are worried or fearful that they won't do what they know they need to do to get the result. So it's not you or the product. It's literally, I don't trust myself to manage this properly, and I'd rather do nothing than try and then have proof to my boss that I can't do it. And that's the real deal when it comes to sales.
For sure. And if you really believe that your product, your service is helping somebody, you're almost doing them a disservice if you're not trying to find a way to break through
that. 100%.
Like that. Awesome, Dan. I want to move to the lightning round, because I've taken up so much of your time. I'm pretty sure we could just stay here and talk for hours about sales, and that would be great morning, afternoon for me. But I know you're a busy guy. You got other things to get to. So let's get to the lightning round. We've got 3 questions here for you. So first one, how do you get people to reply to your emails?
Short and sweet. And I write it as if they, as if I'm a friend of theirs. So I use kind of there's a great guy named Dean Jackson, one of the smartest marketers I've ever talked with. He's a good friend of mine now. And he's got this idea called the 9-word email. So I do this, I cold email founders all the time, invite them to dinners or, you know, when I'm trying to do something, and I write it in the way that it makes it seem like we might've met before. So I'd be like, hey, Colin, are you in Toronto next week? And you'd be like, do I know this guy? and then you reply, right? And I'll do it sometimes, I'll do it from my phone. And I think that, you know, you can hack it and make it look like you sent it from your iPhone mm-hmm. on your computer. But I think it's, you know, what I call a spear email, short, personal, and expecting a reply. So that's the way I do it.
Beautiful. When you are now, I don't imagine you're cold calling, but let's say you're on a call and somebody's sort of giving you the brush off. How do you handle that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I just know how to do this based on reading tons and tons and tons on sales in cold calls. To me, it's, you know, especially if they say, just send me the information, I'll take a look at it. I'll say, yeah, I'd be happy to get that to you within the next hour. But while I have you on the phone, let's first see if this is actually something that can help you and if there's a real need on your end. And then I'll go, you know, how are you currently doing whatever it is I'm selling? So literally it's always acknowledged. So I have this whole framework I teach called the objection overrider, but it's like, for sure I'll do that. But while I have you on the call, let's see first if I can. And so it's all of a sudden you get to where you want to go. Mm-hmm. And then they go, we've already taken care of that. Say, great, I understand, you know, Bob, but isn't it true that if you could get the same or even better result for less than you're spending right now, it'd be silly for us not to at least listen to how that might happen, right? You see, many of our clients I work with told me, blah, blah. So you, there's always a way. So like, to me, it's what I want to do is write a list of objections. Okay. Here's all the things that could happen and then have my answer ready to go and make sure it feels good. And I think that's what professional salespeople do. So outbound, you definitely want a script like that or similar.
For sure. And I love, this is sort of the hand on the doorknob trick. They're like, hey, get out of here. You're like, yeah, yeah, sure. I'm out of here. I'm on my way out. But before I go, last question, you know, and then you dive into.
Yeah. So it's the heel, you go to your heels and they think, oh, it's done. But before I go, I just got a question to make sure that when I follow up, that I might be able to help, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Right. I think what I've discovered, especially if you're selling to CEOs and owners, they respect the hustle, right? Like I got an email today from HubSpot, from somebody at HubSpot, this guy, EJ. He saw that I shared one of those articles and he emailed asking, cause I didn't link up HubSpot to their website. So he must work in their SEO department. And he goes, would you mind updating the blog with the link to HubSpot where you mentioned it? And my reply to him was, you know, I looped in my web guy and I said, EJ, man, I appreciate the hustle. Yeah, I'll do it. And I was like, hey, can you update it? Let us know when it's done. So it's just like, I think sometimes if you can do that, especially to owners, they're going to go, all right, I respect that. Let's talk. What do you got for me?
Yeah. Awesome, man. And so last question, what do you do when you need to really push at the end of the quarter?
To me, it's all about, let's look at the deals. Let's prioritize. Let's talk about next actions and let's get those done ASAP. And I help them with framing and language and follow-up, right? So usually we'll get on a Zoom session and it'll be a working session. And essentially all the salespeople will kind of review, set the action plan. And I might be working with one salesperson around language and follow-up sequence. And the other salespeople can listen, but we're all working towards getting those follow-ups and activities done as a group, almost like a sprint.
Beautiful. Love it. We do something similar, but it's all about having your qualification criteria and your sales stages mapped out ahead of time, because otherwise I find it's just impossible and it's just sort of like gut feel and...
Oh yeah. Like that's all given. Like, you know, the pipeline kind of process has to be done. But at the end of the quarter, I just think there's a lot of low hanging fruit that we just, you know, sometimes they may be overestimating and I'll just give them the right language, especially as a founder, like I'll give them the right case study. I'll give them the right wording, the right data point, the right reference, whatever it is to really get the deal done.
Totally. Dan, thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to give you a chance give you an opportunity to sort of share or pitch anything in the most sales podcast way possible. We're going to do a cold call role play. So
cool.
Set the stage here. Who am I in this and what are you selling?
Okay. This is interesting. So you're a SaaS founder. I'm selling coaching and I'm calling you cold.
Yeah.
Cool. Huh. How would I set the frame for this? Because this to me is always the frame. I'm going to go, man, I don't know. This is a great lesson. I call them the three shitty calls. Like I'm just going to do three and figure it out. So let's just do it and we'll see what happens.
All right. Sounds good. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin. How's it going? Dan Martell calling.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, man. I got your name from John. And he mentioned that I should reach out. Have you ever met with, you know, blah, 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 right? So that's one angle, mentioning somebody they would know.
Yeah.
So again, it's like, sometimes I like to use the, if you're a known entity, like, hey, it's Dan calling from Dunder Mifflin. And have you heard of us? And sometimes they'll say yes or no, mm-hmm. but it's really just to get an answer to move on. Yeah, man, I don't know if I would have to spend some time mapping it out to feel like it's good.
Yeah, that's fair. And so, yeah, I mean, so much of it comes down to the context, right? And the research that goes in ahead of time. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I do cold outbound and we do segmentation, I'll definitely personalize by, let's say I'll use like Built With or something else. And I'll be like, hey, Colin, I noticed that you guys are using Infusionsoft on your website. Or notice you're using Yesware, you know, or whatever. Have you noticed a drop recently in your conversions or something that I know is true, right? Just to build context. And then I'll go into, hey, it's cool. I actually work with customers just like you. I might even start off by saying I have nothing to sell. That's my favorite thing. I remember one time I got on a call and the guy goes, so what do you got to sell? And I said, absolutely nothing. He's like, really? And I said, yeah, I'm just here to see if there's any challenges that I might be able to help you with. Really? Yeah. So I'm just curious, who's your ideal customer? You know, who do you work with that you love working with? And then we just go through it. And then by the end, I had his credit card and he just said, that was amazing. And I said, I appreciate it. You know, like that's when you get in flow. Like, and that's the thing, Colin. For me, if you're doing outbound, you get those three calls done. One of my buddies, Kevin, he used to work for Bear Stearns. And the way he was one of the top producers. And he told me the way he did is every day he'd write out 100 numbers, you know, 1 to 30, whatever, And he would do 1,000 calls a day to get 100 connects.
Damn. Okay?
Well, yeah, he was a pro and he wouldn't leave till the sheet was done. And I love that idea of just saying when, you know, at 8 a.m. when everybody else was prepping, he was calling. And I love that idea of like, if you are a professional and you are a high performer, you build your practice, right? And for me, it's, you know, those first three calls, I don't care who you are, get them done, get them out of the way because they don't matter, right? I literally, Colin, there's a video, if somebody searches cold calling Dan Martell, you'll hear an audio of me talking to a founder, cold calling restaurants on his behalf to just show him that he could have been doing this 6 months ago. And I had no special skills and I ended up getting him a meeting with the marketing manager at one of the local restaurants, right? On the second call, the first one was a complete shit show, kind of like the one I just did with you.
Yeah.
Then I learned, then I changed my angle and I got a meeting for him, you know, and it's just like, I was like, dude, just open up Google, man. Like you're selling to restaurants, Google Maps, restaurant, your city, ring, ring, ring. Yes. Is the manager there? No, she's out. Oh, and her name is Sally. Great. Do you, when do you expect her to be back? Oh, around 2 o'clock. Perfect. I'll give Sally a call back. Can you let her know Dan called? Okay, perfect. So I call back. Hey, Sally, it's Dan calling. Yeah, somebody mentioned you call. Perfect. So, hey, I was just wondering, Sally, do you guys ever run these kind of promotions? Blah, 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 blah. Like, and I didn't even know their product. I just knew that they solve marketing problems. So it's like, to me, it's just getting it done and going through the motions to just get that clear. It's almost like a engine starting that hasn't been started in a while. You just gotta whoosh, flush it.
Totally. So tell me about the course then, because you're helping SaaS founders, and basically this, what we went through today was sort of part of that. You know.
Oh, this what we went through today is like a tiny, tiny part of it. You know. So here's the deal. I only work with people swimming towards me, so I've got nothing to sell. Literally, that's not a sales thing. If you like what you've heard today, feel free to reach out, go check out my website, ping me, talk to one of my product specialists, and they can see if it's a fit. But at the end of the day, I only work with B2B SaaS founders that are ambitious, that want to grow, and want to solve a meaningful problem for them. If you just want to build a business and sit on a beach and do nothing, cool, go find somebody else. I'm not your guy. But if you want to level up your game and who you are and how you show up for your team, and you want to do that in a great way that not only gets you incredible results, but actually, you know, my biggest thing, like calling people always ask me like, Dan, why are you coaching when you could be starting another company or investing more? Here's the way I think about it. For every founder that I work with, and I work with many 10 million plus ARR companies, you know, they've got 100 employees, 150 employees, 300 employees. Like if I can help the CEO and the leader level up the way he communicates and leads and sets the vision and just hires better and all that stuff. Like, I'm having an impact on people's lives I'll never meet, but at scale. And that to me is why I get up every day to produce the world's like best coaching program for B2B SaaS founders. That is it. That is all. That's my mission. And if people are interested, they can reach out and we'll see if it's a fit.
Sounds great. And we're going to throw a link to the Rocket demo in the show notes. So if you want to get that, check it out. It'll also conveniently link you to Dan's site. So if you want to get in touch, that's the best place to do it. Dan, thank you so much for coming on the show. Tons of value. Really appreciate it.
Colin, this is super fun, man. Really grateful. Appreciate it, man. Look forward to seeing you soon.